Hello, everyone, and welcome to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler, and I'm so happy that you've joined us. Part of what drives my coaching career, and by extension this podcast, is to provide hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. I believe that there is tremendous power in choice. We are confronted with choices from the time we wake up in the morning until the time our heads hit the pillow at the end of the day. Will I choose to believe in possibilities for myself? Or will I choose to believe in my limitations? Will I choose courage? Or will I choose fear? Will I choose to listen to those who believe in me? Or will I choose to listen to those who doubt me and tell me that I'm not good enough? Will I choose to do the work that I know that I need to do in order to move towards my desired future? And will I choose that consistently, every day, not just once or not just for a couple of weeks, but every day for the long haul? I spent about 10 years of my life recovering from an illness that one doctor said I only had a 3% chance of recovering. And here's what I learned. I had to choose possibilities. Even when I wasn't even fully sure of what those could be, I had to choose courage. I had to choose to listen to those who believed that I would recover. And I had to do the tedious, grinding work that, at the beginning, seemed so bleak and so far away from any sort of desirable future. But I knew one truth. If I did nothing, nothing would change. And at least I was going to give myself a chance at a desirable future. This podcast was created to help you make the choices that will propel you towards your desired future. So what are we waiting for? Let's get to this week's episode. My guest today is the global head of content at Sandler Training. He is the host of not one, but two podcasts, How to Succeed and Playful Humans. He is the co-author of LinkedIn, The Sandler Way. He is also an award-winning speaker, and he has entertained over 2,000 audiences. He has performed as an educator, keynote speaker, radio on-air personality, karaoke host, game show host, and DJ, where he once opened for Billy Idol and Frankie Vale. He has been trusted to educate and entertain audiences at Google, the Kansas City Chiefs, Qualcomm, Sprint, Eli Lilly, Harrah's Casinos, United Healthcare, and many others. His name is Mike Montague, and I cannot wait for you to meet him. Mike, thank you so much for joining me today.
So good to be here. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. So why don't we just dive right in? And I'm thinking this should be a fun topic. Why don't we just dive right in? And can you tell us a little bit about your story and why you do what you do?
Well, sure. Yes. You mentioned that because now my work with Playful Humans is supposed to be playful. So, Bobby, it's really hard, actually, especially on these podcasts and stuff, to not make it serious, because there are some serious issues like burnout and mental health or physical health that I talk about a lot. And I think people are so trained these days to want, like, what are my 7 steps to be more playful in life?
And you're like, I'm being real serious about that.
Yeah, that kind of defeats the purpose. You know, I do have some steps and things that we'll share. But for me, it's really about re-engaging with life and remembering that we were born to be playful humans. Nobody has to tell us when we're kids to use our imagination or to go outside and play or to do what we enjoy in life. And it's somewhere around, it turns out, like 12 or 13 years old, we start paying attention to other people. And that's where I think things go dramatically wrong. And so I was lucky. I was blessed. I grew up in a great house with some cool, creative people and fun people in my family that inspired me. And so I think that kind of gave me the opportunity to be this voice for people that I did find that baggage, but it was later in life when I was, 30 or something. And I felt like I had to be professional and make money and get a career and, house and everything. That was really where I kind of lost my edge. And we can talk more about that later too.
Yeah. Well, let's dive right into that. Tell me a little bit more about that. When you say that, you kind of feel like you lost your edge a little bit.
Yeah. And words are interesting because I think edges are interesting. I think the stuff that is unusual and things that are sometimes prickly to people is what's most valuable about you. If we're all this amorphous blob of humans that all do the same thing and look the same and fit in and the same and believe the same things, that's not interesting and it's not valuable to humanity. We need a lot of different people running a lot of different experiments, having a lot of fun, you know, trying different things than we are. And to an organization or to your clients or even to yourself and your life, I feel like the most value comes from the things that are uniquely you.
Yeah.
And so when I was a kid, I loved to play with the radio. I wanted to be on the radio. I would interview my brother and sister, you know, we'd race across the pool and be like, how's it feel to be the winner? Feels great. You know, and do different shows and things for my family or different events. You know, I think a lot of kids do that, but we'd go in the back room, you know, and come up with a little skit and then come out and try and make our parents laugh and then go back in. And
oh my goodness.
They called that our creative nerdery. And so again, I was really blessed that after college, I wanted to be on the radio. So I did a little bit of broadcasting. I did get my degree in communication theory and human relations. So I had a fallback position, but
yeah,
that was in the communications department. So I could do the broadcasting classes and I went to Top 40 radio. So I was on a retro station for a while. And then I ended up getting my own show on Mix 93.3, Kansas City's number one hit music station, and did that. And it was amazing to me. I think that's really where things kind of went sideways for me, is that I kind of got my dream job when I was 25, 26 years old. And it was nothing like I expected. I wanted to be funny and be entertaining and to make people laugh. And I had also developed some website design skills in high school and was kind of a nerd too. And I was like, I don't want to be a computer nerd. I don't want to be stuck in a room by myself behind a computer all day. I want to be fun. I want to be on the radio. But guess what that job is? Sitting in a room behind a computer all day. And you tell the funniest joke you've ever heard of and nobody laughs, right? Because they're all in their cars or their homes listening to the radio.
Right.
And so I was basically sitting in a room, you know, for five and a half hours a day, you know, trying to come up with jokes that I thought were funny, but not knowing if anybody's laughing or tuning out or changing the channel or groaning or anything. And it was really hard. So what I found was like, the dream of radio was not the same as the job of radio. And that's when I kind of started to pivot to other things.
Yeah, I'd never thought of it before. But when you said that, I'm imagining like someone putting all their effort into telling a joke or whatever it is, and then being like, I don't know, did anybody hear it? Is this thing on?
One red light flashes in the corner of your eyes of like, it's usually like the hotline was my friend or another person at the station calls up and is like, hey, that was a good one. That was funny.
Yeah.
Like, all right, thanks. One person called in to tell me that was funny.
Yeah. Wow. So then you had to shift a little bit. And was that when you went to sales?
Yeah. I took a quick detour. I was always designing websites. I did that for the radio stations and the Chiefs Radio Network and stuff as well. Wow. I tried starting my own internet radio station and that did pretty good in the 2000s. It got up to like 30,000 listeners a month. And
that's good.
I kind of had to decide then whether I wanted to get sponsorships. It got expensive paying for the song rights to that many people. So I was kind of playing with my passions, but I didn't really land on it. And my father was a sales trainer. So this is another kind of ironic story that I think, you know, people, especially young adults, but other adults can recognize as well. I was in my 20s and I thought, well, I don't know if I can be a sales trainer. I don't know if like at 27, I can go to a 55-year-old business owner and be like, here's what you should do with your sales team. But I had a ton of this website experience and social media experience because I'm on the radio. I had thousands of followers. I'm a local celebrity.
Yeah.
And so instead, I walked into owners' offices and said, here's what you should do with your sale or your social media and your internet websites. And it took me about 3 years. So after 3 years of doing that for an advertising agency, I woke up and I was like, oh, you idiot. It's the same thing. You have this domain expertise that business owners don't have. It doesn't matter. It's for sales or marketing or operations or anything else. It can be accounting. Like if you're spending your time studying and learning something that other people aren't, again, you're finding your niche and your edge there. That's valuable to anybody of any age mm-hmm. experience, because they haven't had that same, you know, learning, those, that same attention that you have to the details and the subject.
Yeah. Wow. So then you were doing that, doing the Sandler, doing the sales. I wanted to ask you this. What made you start the podcast Playful Humans?
So it was the podcast was a little bit of a COVID baby. I'll be honest. I've had a podcast for Sandler and the sales training called How to Succeed for 6 years now. It has over 2 million downloads and over 500 episodes, doing great and stuff. But I kind of found that two things. One, when you're working with an audience that large and a company that large, an international organization, there's certain restrictions, right? I can't just do whatever I want with that show. Mm-hmm. So I needed a little bit of a creative outlet. And the other side of that was making a brand and a personal brand for myself and a voice for myself, that when I'm doing stuff for Sandler or the sales training, I have to take on that brand voice. I have to represent this 50-year-old company and hundreds of sales trainers around the world and, you know, thousands of clients. It's a big responsibility, and it wasn't quite as fulfilling for me as I wanted it to be. I still love it. I still do it to this day. And I get to do training for big companies like Uber and Thermo Fisher Scientific and do really cool events, still host the podcast and webinars for up to 10,000 people in on that. And that's fun, but I needed to express myself too. Mm-hmm. I needed a creative outlet. And so I started this community to find other creative nerds and playful people. And that involved into interviewing them. And on Playful Humans, I've interviewed people like the founder of Comedy Central and Justin Guarini from American Idol and winners of the like talent shows, like the jugglers from America's Got Talent, or a guy that took his dog on an amazing race style show called The Pack on Amazon and stuff. And it's just been super fun, and it's really completely frivolous. So that's what I love mm-hmm. about Play is there's no goal for it. I'm not trying to push any products. I'm not trying to sell anything. I do speaking engagements and corporate training. I ended up getting a job as a game show host during COVID. So I saw this pop up that they needed a virtual game show host. And I'm kind of going all over the place. So you tell me what's interesting. But it popped up. They were auditioning for a virtual game show host for this company out of California in San Diego. And I was like, sure, why not? You know, they're on the West Coast. My headquarters for my day job is on the East Coast. I can probably do this at night and on the weekends and stuff. So I got the job, and I ended up doing holiday parties for like Google and Facebook and the San Francisco 49ers and hosting these game shows where I get to, you know, be the Steve Harvey of the show and interview people. And it's been so much fun, got me back to my performance roots. And that really kind of evolved into like my brand and my voice. And they happened to open up a place here in Kansas City. So now I host live game shows for people here as well. And we do company parties and private parties and bachelorette parties and just have fun hosting game shows for people.
Yeah. You know what I love about that, Mike, too, is that it, you know, sometimes I think we put a lot of pressure on our careers. Like we should get all the meaning from the one thing. And I had a guest on just the other day, and he was talking about the value of a side hustle. Because he says, you know, sometimes you've got other passions, and it sounds like that's what you've tapped into as well.
Well, 100%. Two things there for me. One is, if you've noticed throughout my career, it's a little windy. There's kind of three paths. There's like the sales, there's the broadcasting and entertainment, and there's the web design. So I got this job with Sandler as the international company by writing a book, LinkedIn for the Sandler Way, which was picked up by LinkedIn themselves and got a whole bunch of attention and stuff. So the social media side works in there too. It's a little bit entertainment. It's a little bit broadcasting, but it's also a little bit business and sales and marketing. And so I think weaving all those together is what makes it interesting. When you have a side hustle, you create this uniqueness. Well, people know what maybe sales trainers make, or people know what web designers make, or they know what public speakers make, but they don't know what a radio DJ, web designer, sales trainer makes. That's not a job description you can look up on Glassdoor and find out what to pay this person. So I've been able to create value by mixing all of these things together, but also not putting too much pressure for one of them to be the whole thing, my whole identity and my whole life, right?
Yeah. I think what you said there too about not putting too much pressure, because I think we've gotten really good at that in our lives. You know,
Well, that's the other thing that happens. and that was going to be my second point, is I think people make a mistake here when they think about like being dedicated. We're all told that you have to do this. You have to be all in. You have to spend 80 hours a week charging and you got to grind and it's got to be hard work to be successful. I have found the complete opposite to be true. When I'm out DJing a wedding and playing the chicken dance and people are being crazy and having fun and it's completely frivolous, it's totally easy to relax and enjoy the moment. That's when people go, you know what, Mike, you're so awesome. I need you to do my wedding next summer. And when I'm working really hard and I'm struggling and I'm writing this blog post and I'm grinding and things, I put it out there and it's crickets and nobody notices. I think we trick ourselves that success has to be hard because that's what everybody said. But look at the people that are most successful. Like, I don't think Oprah, I know she worked really hard, but she's living her voice. She's in the moment when she's doing her show. She's not working hard. She's playing at that. And I think the same thing is true for other people. We trick ourselves that success is really harder. But if you're in flow, it almost feels like it's cheating. Mm-hmm. You're like, wait, no, I can't get paid to do this. I mean, the podcast we're doing right now, I'm loving this, right? Or I open for Billy Idol and Frankie Valli on stage in front of thousands of people. And it's like, oh, I'm getting paid to do this? Are you serious?
Yeah.
Like that, it feels like a cheat. And so we avoid those things rather than leaning into them. What I'm trying to do is inspire people to lean into those things. Because what's easy for you and what gives you energy, other people are going, I can't believe they do that. You know, I think my example in public speaking is a great example of that, because people go, oh, you're so natural up there on stage, or I could never get on stage in front of that many people. And you go, no, one, you didn't see my first show. It was a disaster. It was definitely not a natural. And number two, like that, I can't do what you do. I can't, you know, fill out spreadsheets all day. That would drain me. Like, I would be afraid I'd make a mistake or whatever. So,
but some people love it.
Yeah. Right.
And they're good at it.
If that's your thing, go for it. Lean into it. Yeah.
Right.
What's easy for you is where your sweet spot is.
That's right. That's right. And what gives you energy?
Yes.
You know, like I started a new segment of this podcast called Rise and Thrive. And it's just it's on Mondays and it's 5 to 10 minutes. And I had the idea and I started writing them and it's just me, no guest or anything like that. And I'm like, what am I going to have to talk about? But I thought, well, it's a good idea. I now have more than 5 months of content written. And every time I sit down to write, 3 new ideas for 3 other episodes come to me. And I think it's that same thing. It's like, that doesn't feel like work to me. I wake up in the morning and I can't wait to do it. You know, but I think you're right. We have that, oh, it's got to be hard. We got to work hard. We got to grind.
Yeah. And I think people just, I mean, look, it's all throughout our society. It's cultural.
Oh, yeah.
But what people don't realize is we made all of this up like within the last 100 years. Retirement was not a concept in the world in the 1900s, at the turn of the century. I don't know if you've ever heard the story, Bobby, but it's crazy. So invented by the Germans in 1900, that's not necessarily the society we would want to emulate, right? But they had forced retirement because over 80% of the people didn't live to 65. So they were talking about people at the very end of your lifespan. You might live 2 more years after 65. And now companies have bought into this concept and promoted it. And our culture is like, oh, you get this magical retirement. If you just work hard for 40 years of your career, then there's this magical time where you don't have to work and you can go play. And it's like, wait, we made all that up, but it's not true. You can play your whole life.
That's
and
right.
You know what? You know when you need to work? When you're 65, you need to keep your muscles strong and you need to be doing work and keeping your mind sharp and paying attention to things, not stopping using your brain, not stopping using your muscles and sitting on a couch or a beach, you know, depending on what your retirement looks like. Right.
Right. And staying engaged. You know, when you said the thing about the retirement too, this was back in, oh my gosh, 2001. So we're going way back now. He was my boyfriend then, husband now. We were living in Chicago and all of our friends were in the same pattern of both of them worked like crazy, you know, 60 to 80 hours a week. And they lived to maybe have 1 or 2 weeks vacation a year. And all they were doing is working to pay the mortgage, working to have the nice cars. It's like Rick and I sat back and we're like, what is this really all there is? And then hopefully you get to retirement and you still have something, you know, you still have a body that you can do something with. And we said, you know what, we want to live differently. And that's
so great.
Yeah, it led us to Portland, Oregon. We started a business there, not the most successful business in the wide world. That's okay. But in 2009, we sat down, we were back in Chicago, and we made a vision board. And it was all the things that, like, we clipped out newspaper stuff and, you know, magazine pictures. And we're like, wow, we stepped back. And Rick said, you know what we're really talking about is how do we create the life that we love to live every single day? Yes. Instead of waiting to retirement or waiting for my 2 weeks of vacation. And it sounds like you have a lot of that same kind of passion or for that as well.
Oh, absolutely. You nailed it 100%. There's this parable of a Mexican fisherman that an American businessman was on vacation in Mexico. He's very successful. And he sees this fisherman who fishes a few hours a day, sells the fish at the local market, and then spends the rest of the day drinking margaritas, playing with his kids, enjoying the beach in Mexico. And the American businessman said, you know, if you worked 8 hours a day, you could double your haul, and then you could sell that to Extra Fish. You could scale your company. You could own, you know, several fleets of boats. And then, you know, 20 years from now, you could have a huge cash out and retire. And the guy says, well, what'd you do then? Well, you could fish whenever you liked. You could drink margaritas on the beach and play with your kids. It's like,
oh, that's what he's doing.
Right. You're like, that sounds like a really dumb model, right? When you lay it out that way. But I think,
yeah,
you're right. I want to live a life where I look forward to every day, not something 20 years from now for me, or even that far into the future. Because I think if 2020 taught us anything, like, we're not guaranteed the future. Yeah. And the plans change, right? Things happen. Yeah. And so even with my story about being on radio, what you think you might want at 65, you don't know. You're going to be a completely different person then.
That's right.
Completely different body, completely different experience, completely different likes and preferences. And so think back to how you were 20 years ago and how different that was. You can't plan for that person. No. And so I think a lot of that just, to me, kind of becomes pointless. We're trying to optimize and plan out things that are impossible. They're,
right.
It's, you work better that way.
And we miss the moment that we're in, you know, when we're doing that. And I think, you know, when you were talking there, I think this triggered for me. Part of probably what influenced me that way is I had an uncle, Jack, and he worked hard. He was a very hard worker that, you know, was on the Nugent side of the family, very poor, provided for his mom. And he always said that when he was going to retire at the age of 40, and then he was going to spend his time fishing and hunting, right? Mm-hmm. And he was able to retire at the age of 40, and he was killed 6 months later in a car accident. And it's like, oh my God, he never got there, you know? And it was like, wow. And that's reality. So
the sad ones for
those
sure,
are the sad ones, you know, and this is a guy who started working early because he had to.
It's true for all of us, you know, really. One other thing I wanted to share that I think demonstrates this point a lot, and I love Lego. I have this huge Lego collection over here, just off screen. You can't see, but like a basic, just like a blue 8-studded Lego block. You're like, okay, the regular just square old block. Picture that. If I had 6 of them, how many combinations do you think? How many different builds or combinations could I do with 6 8-studded Lego blocks?
I don't even know. I would say a lot. How's that? A math answer. A lot.
So yeah, the math answer is over 100 million possible combinations.
That's what I was going to say.
8-studded Lego blocks. Yeah, that's exactly. You said it. You nailed it. A lot.
A million.
Well, here's the deal. There's no right way to put these 6 blocks together, right? I mean, it depends on what you're doing or what you're trying to accomplish or what you're trying to create. Now think about humans. How many ways can humans interact with one another? If you had 6 people in your organization, there's no right way to align them. There's no way to build this thing in any type of optimization. There have been studies on this, and when you start adding blocks to this combination, the options become so huge that even supercomputers can't calculate even how many possible combinations. It would take them years to even know how many there were, let alone what an optimal way to do it is. So we fool ourselves, I think, with technology and with our modern human brains that we can figure this out, that there's a right answer. And if we just optimize our time and we, you know, work on our time management skills and our productivity and we set the Pomodoro timer, that we can control everything in our life. But again, like looking back at 2020 and looking at these options in front of us, there's no right answer. There's nobody in control. There's no way to figure out all of the things you would need to figure out in order to control something. It's in the hundreds of millions.
Yeah. You know, when you said there is no one right answer. I took a creativity class way back when I was in undergrad, and it was taught by, she did improv, and it was, talk about being outside my comfort zone to do improv. Oh, I hated it, but I loved it at the same time. And one of the things that she always said is there is no one right answer. There are usually many right answers. And that was, besides the discomfort of having to do improv, that was my big takeaway. But I loved it because think about how that opens things up for us.
Yeah, I've interviewed improv experts and stuff as well. I did a little bit of improv in college, but stand-up comedy is one of the things still on my like fun bucket list. But you're right. I mean, all life is an improv anyway. It's all just a game we're playing and we're trying to figure it out. There's no way to win this game either. None of us make it out alive. So the
enjoy it.
Well, exactly. I heard this great analogy this week that was talking about music, right? In music, the point isn't to finish the song. It's not to do it as fast as possible or to win music. You can't. It's a different type of game. It's an infinite game, right? The point is to enjoy it. It's to sing and dance while the music's playing, not to get through it. And life is the same way, right? We can't, there's no perfect song. There's no way to win music. There's no way, we don't want it to finish. We want it to keep going, right? And that's a different challenge that I think we mix up in our brains. The difference between trying to make life keep going, to enjoy it as much as possible along the way, rather than a finish line, a destination, or even a journey. It's not a journey because where are we going? We're on a giant ball spinning around a flaming sun in the middle of space. Like what destination are you trying to get to? Right.
Yeah. And I heard someone talk about it this way once too. We try to capture the happiness. Like, you know, we take our pictures and we're gonna put it on Facebook and blah, blah, blah. And by doing that, we're actually missing out on the actual moment and the actual happiness that would come from that. So,
you'd be surprised when you go to a concert or I do these game shows and stuff, how many people spend half the event
phones,
like staring at their phone or trying to get something for Instagram and stuff rather than enjoying the moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's another dichotomy there too, that I think it's just one of the ironies of life that people think the present is fleeting. We've kind of been taught that this present is like this instant moment, like, think about how small or how fast a second is on your watch or an old clock face. Like it's a hairline little thing ticking around, right? But that's not true. That's actually the opposite. Your whole life is lived in the present.
It's all
the rest
present.
Of your life will be the present. There is no past or future. We can't do anything about the future. We can't do anything about the past. So everything is the present. And so you're right, when we try to capture this present or we try to hold on to it, it's one of those things that slips away. And so I think about these ironic processes a lot because there's some things like that in life. And that really takes me to my work now, that if you try to go to sleep, it's less likely that you go to sleep, right? If you try to go to the bathroom or make somebody love you or anything like that, like, it makes it less likely that you do so. So you have to let go of that. And some of the best things in life, like play and fun, you can't force fun. You can't force love. You can't make play too serious or it slips out of your fingers. You just can't get the grasp on
it. It shouldn't be serious.
Right.
Right.
So it's when you let go, and creativity is a big one because that's what a lot of like companies and maybe your listeners think about is like, well, how can we innovate? Or I need more creative ideas, or I need more problem solvers. Well, saying, quick, Bobby, say something funny, or quick, be creative. That never works. It puts too much pressure on it. What you have to do is give people space to think and room to try things and fail and to experiment. And that's what creates creativity and innovation, is by letting it go and stopping the process of trying to find a right answer.
Yeah. And I was just going to ask you, how do we, because it sounds like it's letting go of that attachment or whatever, but how do we let go?
Oh man, that's a big one. I think it's a combination of maybe two or three things. Number one, it's an attitude shift. You have to give yourself permission to fail and permission to experiment and to try things and not get hung up on the outcome. That's probably the big hard one. So instead of asking yourself, what's the right answer? What's the purpose for my life? Or there's no one purpose. We have many purposes, right? So there's no right answer to what you're going to do with your life or what career to pick. It's what do you want to do next? Most interesting. And then I think it is what I said about giving space. So what I like to do when I need to be creative or when I want to let go is all work. I might read a ton of books. During COVID, when I was setting up Playful Humans and researching my book, is I read like 15 of the top 15, 20 books on play from world-renowned authors and researchers and everything. And then I just set it all down. I go out and go for a run or a walk or take a shower or build a Lego and do something mindless. And your brain will work on that. If you give it space and you don't try to say, I need an answer right now, it will come to you when it's right. And the easy path will show itself. Things do work themselves out. Yep. There's another great story. I think it was Jeffrey Tambor, the actor from like Arrested Development and things. He told the story of an improv setting where they were in a car and he just took the keys out of the car and threw them off a bridge into the river. And everybody kind of like freaked out. And he goes, no, look, here's the point. You will get home. We won't all just starve and die in the car. Something will happen next. Like when you stop, you can't stop thinking, right? You can't not communicate with people in a car if you're stuck there. You're going to be saying something, even if you're not using words out loud, right? That our brain doesn't shut off. So once you give it permission to let go and you're like, okay, I don't know what's next. Let me find it. You will find it in your gut and your heart and your brain, because we're all getting these whispers. We're just tuning them out, trying to find a better answer.
And I totally agree with that. And they are whispers. And I think part of what happens, I don't know how you feel about this, but we don't give ourselves the margin. Like we're always at the red line. And I feel like this is a drum I'm always beating, but if we're always at the red line, we can't hear the whisper.
Yep.
It's impossible. And our brains don't have the time to think about these things, you know, or if we're always on social media or we're always, you know, busy, 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 our brain doesn't get the chance to work on them.
No,
you know,
and we're not built for long-term stress. We're built for play. And I don't think people realize that. Look at every other animal on the planet, right? Every other mammal plays. They spend about, dolphins spend 8 hours a day playing, 8 hours a day eating, and 8 hours a day sleeping. And they're, you know, really intelligent creatures that are very similar in mammals and makeup that you might have to evade a shark or something. We're good at running sprints and short distances or, you know, coming up with a quick solution in an improv environment, but we're not meant to hold on to stress 60 hours a week and grinding and optimizing everything from sun up to sundown. Those are all things that we've made up. And so, we see people get in that cycle all the time. And it's sad that you need caffeine to wake up before the sun because you're trying to artificially wake yourself up. But that means you have to have something to artificially settle you down later too. And so we've come up with these drugs and other hacks and productivities that are not making us healthier or more productive. All the studies show you become less productive. So really great research here, Bobby, that if you work more than 60 hours a week for more than like 4 to 6 weeks, you actually produce less than if you had just worked 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
That you slow down so much. Your creativity goes out. You start making more mistakes and having to do rework that you could have actually just gone to the park, enjoyed some time with your kids and accomplished the same amount of stuff.
It's stunning.
So it's so crazy.
It's stunning. Have you read the book by Tony Schwartz, The Way We're Working Isn't Working?
Yes. Yes.
Amazing book, isn't it?
Yeah. And there's so many on that subject. It's really kind of crazy that we designed these things for like factory work and other stuff. And what I like to tell people now, especially when I interview people and talking about playing for a living and following your passion and purpose and, you know, doing a creative career, is there's so many things that we can automate robots to do now. If we know what the job is, if it's safe and easy and you just have to push buttons, then we can program a computer to do that. We can have a robot lift these boxes and take them from one end of the warehouse to the other. We don't need humans to do that. We need humans to be creative, to connect with other humans, to create a culture and a movement and energy around something, to have confidence, to try something different that is outside of that normal routine. So almost all of our jobs are in that bucket now and not in the follow the instructions, follow the rules, check these boxes
bucket. Yeah. But I think we forget that sometimes. So,
well, yeah. And so much of our culture is built around those, like the hourly schedule and the work week and, you know, clocking in and clocking out. And, you know, did you check your email and all of these things that you're trying to do what you think you should rather than the stuff that really matters and what is meaningful and impactful. And if you just did that stuff, forgot everything else, I promise you the world doesn't end. I've taken breaks from, I've done a digital detox for 30 days where I just only checked email once a day, did no social media, no television, no nothing. Wow. And you know what I missed? Nothing.
I was going to say not much.
If something important happens, somebody else will tell you about it. You don't need to actually watch the news 24/7 or check Facebook. Like, people will tell you.
Yeah.
And you know what's awesome is like when you want to see what your sister or your parents or kids are doing, you call them up and you ask them and you hang out with them rather than seeing their pictures on Facebook.
Yeah.
And it really changes the game. But so many people think, oh, I couldn't, you know, shut off my email or I couldn't delete my Facebook account. I need this for work. Now, yeah, you don't. No. We all survive just fine before it and we'll survive after it too.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be our whole life, you know?
Yeah.
So as you've been doing the research, you know, because you said you read a whole bunch of books, you've been writing a book, you do this podcast. What are some of your best, I don't know, tips for how people can incorporate more play?
Yeah. I got a free plug here. So it's playfulhumans.com/quiz. There's a playfulness quiz I made up that's like a BuzzFeed style quiz. There's actually 10 different types of play. So I don't think people realize, again, they want the right answer and there's no right answer for anybody because I don't know what play looks like for you. I don't know what you enjoy, what your passions are and how you what gives you energy. So 10 different things. It might be solving puzzles and doing Sudoku. It might be playing board games with your family. It might be exercising, running and jumping. It could be creating and drawing and other things like that. There's actually play that's social play and directing an event for other people. And I don't know about you, Bobby, but usually people that do podcasts and stuff and the type of work that we do are really facilitators of play for other people. And we get energy from kind of producing this entertainment from others. And
yeah.
There's 10 different styles there. It could be nature. It could be thinking and reading and stuff or anything that is actively engaging in your life. So
yeah.
Probably my biggest rule, if I could give one tip to everybody, is what I noticed is watching somebody else do it doesn't count.
No.
So if you say you like sports, but you only watch the NFL and you don't actually throw a football, you don't like sports. You like television. All right. So
great point.
You're watching somebody else live their life. You're not actually living it. And I see that a lot, especially even parents. You know, when you have kids, they start living vicariously through their kids. And they're watching their kids play soccer or go to a recess or go to a birthday party, but they're not actually doing it themselves, right? So my big thing is like, I can get that way about self-help. So I've been talking about other people. My Achilles heel is reading all these books, watching these inspirational videos and getting myself all jazzed up about living life, but not actually doing it.
Yeah.
Some people call that the wantrepreneur thing, right? Like, are you going to start your business or are you going to talk about starting a business? Because they're different things.
They're different things. So, I think that's a great
really
distinction.
On action.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things too, I try not to, or I don't like judge someone else's play. And the reason for that is a lot of people think I'm nuts. One of the things that Rick and I, we love to do is we love to road cycle. And we live just about 9,000 feet in the Rocky Mountains. And where we go road cycling is through the Rocky Mountain National Park. So it's climbing. And
yeah,
you know, it's actually hard work.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like fun to me. But I like riding bikes. But
yeah, but it is for us, you know, because it's like that it feels good. It's fun. And now it's not everybody's idea of fun. It's not like going to a comedy club type of fun, but it made me realize there's a lot of different ways that people can play. There's a lot of different definitions of fun. What's fun for me might not be fun for someone else. And so I always try not to think, why are they doing that? You know, if that makes them happy and they're not hurting anybody, who cares?
I love that. I totally agree. And I'll double down on it and say, I think you also here have to not worry about what other people judge about your fun.
That's right.
So I've already mentioned my Lego habit. That's one that there are plenty of adult fans of Lego. There's a whole group. It's a thing. They make kits just for adults now that are not children at all. Like they have Andy Warhol paintings that you can make and Star Wars or like NASA space kits that are all very, you know, complicated and for adults. But I still think, I mean, my wife will just straight say to me, like, you know, my 42-year-old husband is playing with Lego. And you're like, yeah, that's what I'm doing. No problem. And the kids love it. I think there's so many things that we start judging. Again, it's like around 13 that it's like, okay, adults don't do this. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so whatever that was that you lost, put it back into your life. So if it was drawing or, you know, playing with puppets or creating or painting or even just being silly. I love, you know, telling dad jokes to my nieces and nephew or, you know, making funny pictures. Or we did a fake podcast with them here where I'm at. So I got these two, like, you know, 9-year-olds to do a fake YouTube show. And it was hysterical. We were laughing so hard for hours, just playing around and basically doing make-believe, right? But
yeah,
I can't think of a better way to spend a couple of hours, really. No. It was so much fun.
Yeah. It reminds me once my great niece, her name was is Bailey, when she was like 3 or 4 and they were out visiting. And we were on top of Vail Mountain. And there's all these things you can do on the top of Vail Mountain. There are rock walls to climb. There's horses to ride, all these things. Bailey found it was like a little patch of dirt. And there was a little cave, and we spent probably 90 minutes, and it was all just her imagination. And it was like, that was just a pure, I'll never forget it. It was many years ago. Never forget that time with her. It was absolutely priceless.
I mean, it's so much fun. And we joke about it, right? Like when you buy a kid, a toddler, a birthday gift, and they play with the box for like a half an hour, right? And the $100 gift that was inside is sitting in the corner.
Yeah.
But that's what I think like shows you when your priorities are off or that you didn't need that thing in the first place. My nieces and nephews, again, we had like a paper airplane contest this summer. And again, it was like hours of just being present in the moment and having fun and seeing if we could make different shapes and how far you can go and whether we can hit the target and all kinds of stuff. And just, you know, laughing and challenging each other and playing. But it was just, for me, it's that presence. It's the being in the moment where you're really alive, you're living, you're not thinking about the bills you have to pay or the laundry you got to do later or what's for dinner and other things. And it's funny because sometimes other family members who aren't playing are like, you know, we have to start cleaning up because we got to figure out what's for dinner. I'm like, that's like 2 hours from now. Like, we'll be all right. Like, I'm pretty sure we're not going to starve or, you know, we'll have clothes to wear. We'll figure something out. You know,
we'll figure something out.
And this isn't going to last forever. I think that's what people mistake a little bit too, is I agree with you and productivity experts. If you're saying like, well, we can't just all be frivolous and play all the time. Well, no, but we all have to pay our taxes, you know, and that if you just did drugs and, you know, went crazy and were completely irresponsible, yeah, you'd probably not end up in a very healthy spot. But that's not the way life and play, this healthy play happens. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to try to keep it going for as long as possible, but you do get tired. You have to rest and recover. And we do have to go to sleep. And we, you know, I always use that example of paying the taxes. People say like, oh, if you find your passion in life, you'll never work another day in your life. That's just complete BS. Like, you're going to have to work. Even when I'm hosting game shows, there's days I don't want to do the game show or the audience isn't very fun. Or to be honest with you, last night they were berserk. There was like 24 adults and they were all hammered and throwing things and yelling and screaming. And it was work last night, but still it was more fun work than I would have had otherwise if I was, you know, trying to grind or do something else that wasn't in my nature. But I think people conflate those things. They think you have to be like all in, or I'm going to lose my job and live in a van down by the river if I let go of control. And that's just not the case.
No, it's usually not that dire.
Right.
You know,
there are some things, right? And I think that's where we can say we're adults, right? If at first you don't succeed, skydiving is not for you, right? That's not the time to play around and make things up as you go. But almost everything else is not that serious. It will be okay.
Yeah. I mean, and I loved what you said too a few minutes ago about just being present in the moment, you know, as opposed to worrying about what's next. I think actually that's one of the things I love about the road cycling and also cross country skiing, because I'm completely you're just in the moment in nature and it's just rejuvenating. So
for me, public speaking and podcasting is that way. When I'm doing an interview mm-hmm. like this, I'm just focused on this. When I'm on stage in front of hundreds or thousands of people, like I can't be worried about, you know, what every little thing is or trying to control it. Like I just have to be in the moment and speaking from my heart and being myself authentically. And those are the moments that I live for. I try to get as many as possible.
Yeah. They're special moments, mm-hmm. you know? So tell me a little bit about the book that you're writing.
So I gave you a hint on the content. I haven't quite figured out what I want to do yet with the structure. So there's four big things that I found are the power of play in this experiment that I've been kind of doing for the last couple of years. They are the four C's: creativity, confidence, connection, and culture. And I think those are the things that we've all missed in the pandemic. It's the things that we're optimizing out of our life. And it's all the things that play brings back into your life. Now that I'm thinking about it, I might have to come up with a fifth C about health, because you and I were mentioning, I think mental health and physical health are the fifth really largest benefit that I've seen for myself and for other people. But those connections, we're social media is not social. Again, it's well named, it's well marketed, but it's not social. It's what I give you, like with the football example. Reality TV is not real. It's all staged and fake. Yeah. And so by calling this reality or calling this social has ruined our ability to connect with other people and realize what is real, and that we need to actually go talk with people, connect with people. Play builds huge confidence because you learn how to fail and you learn what your strengths are and what you overcome, and that you can push yourself and make it through. I'll tell you this quick story just because I got to tell it every chance I get. But I mentioned I opened for Billy Idol. I got fired live on stage in front of about 4,000 people.
Oh, my goodness.
Billy Idol and his manager met with me before the show and they said, play whatever you want. You know, I was on a retro station at the time and they said, whatever you play on the radio is fine. Play mostly rock music and don't play any Billy Idol songs because we're going to play those later in the night. I said, perfect. I got this. When I think of Billy Idol, I think of like 80s rock, you know, like Jesse's Girl or 8675309 and things like that. You know, and I'm like, okay, I got this. And apparently Billy Idol, when he thinks of himself like classic rock. So he was thinking like Rolling Stones, Aerosmith, like Lynyrd Skynyrd type of rock. And so I played a couple of wrong songs. The manager comes out on stage and is like, we said, play rock music, play some rock music. And I immediately panicked because I'm a club DJ and this is before Wi-Fi and I could download any new songs. There's like two rock songs you can dance to. You Shook Me All Night Long and Pour Some Sugar on Me.
Oh, man.
Other than that, I didn't have any other CDs there. So I played those two songs, made it about 10 minutes. And I was like, all right, that should have bought me some goodwill. Let me play something else. And I went back to a retro song and just the lights came down. The sound goes off. I have no control. I look over and they're like, you're done. And I had to slink off the stage. And I don't think the audience really knew that I was like fired or anything, but I didn't collect $200. I didn't pass go. I just got my stuff and got the heck out of there. But I tell that story every time because one, that's how I get paid for that gig. I didn't get my money. I want my story. And two, I was bulletproof after that. Nothing that bad can go wrong on this podcast or when I'm on stage doing sales training or anything else. Like, as a performer, that was the greatest gift I ever got because I was like, hey, I'm taking a shot. It was my first time opening for a big act like that. And it was like, I was the only one at the station that had the guts to do it. And I just made myself bulletproof. So later I opened for Frankie Valli and about 10, 12,000 people. And it was a success. It was a blast. And I got over the fear and everything. But it's so amazing. You only get those opportunities by getting outside your comfort zone and taking risks and playing with ideas or actions and stuff.
And that's the value of failure, you know?
Yeah.
Because then, like, I remember way back as in 2004, I had a presentation. I was doing one before lunch, one after lunch. The one before lunch was awesome. The one after lunch was awful. Even though the person who hired me, she was happy. I wasn't. I'm like, I will never, ever, ever go into it like not being prepared for how to adjust. You know, I'm going to have the toolbox. I'm going to be ready. That's the value of when we stumble, if we choose it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's the only way to make things happen. Again, we fool ourselves that we can optimize things or we can learn so much. But if you keep getting ready to get ready, you're never going to take any action. No. It takes 10 times as long. Now, I believe you can learn lessons from other people. You can practice and get better. And safe practice is extremely valuable. But until you go and you play the game, until you do it live, it doesn't count for me. So I think
take the action.
Yeah. And play just builds such confidence, because that's how we learn as children. You learn by trying things and failing. You know, you put dirt in your mouth and you go, "Ooh, that's gross. Let me not do that again." Or if I, you know, if I make fun of Johnny on the playground, he punches me in the face. So I'm not going to, you know, say rude things to people. And that's how we learn filters and boundaries and connections with other people. And so all of those things are important. And that reminds me of another funny joke I heard recently about people coming out of the pandemic. There was a fight at a San Diego Padres game, and they were replaying this online. And I thought, you know, they were going to say, like, you know, fighting is not okay. And, you know, this is 2021 and we should be better humans. And the announcer just said, "People, this is not Twitter. When we go back into the real world, if you say something dumb, you might get punched in the face." And I was like, oh man, some of us did forget that we actually have to be on this planet with other people. And so culture is another big one of these things, that creating a culture is about connections. It's not about creating rules or, you know, Instagram likes or whatever. It's about learning boundaries with other people and creating an atmosphere and environment that everybody can play along with and be happy with. And sometimes you have to push boundaries, and they're gray areas that you have to move back and forth. And we all know all the gray areas have gone. It's black or white, right or wrong, this side, that side. And so I think play brings in a lot more of those boundaries for culture and connection that we desperately, desperately need.
Yeah. And it reminds us too that we are connected, right? We're sharing the space. Yeah. And I think that's important. So, well, Mike, this has been great. Absolutely wonderful. How can people learn more about you, about what you're doing and your podcasts?
Yeah. The website is super easy. It's playfulhumans.com. And you can take the quiz on there. You can join the community of other adults kind of rediscovering the power of play and reminding other people to go out there and have fun. And that's what the podcast is all about. I interview people that play for a living. So I mentioned the guests earlier, but anybody that's having fun and living their best life, I love to talk to them. The How to Succeed podcast is the big one. That's for Sandler training. And it's got over 500 episodes. You can find both podcasts wherever you listen to podcasts. And on there, I interview really famous authors like Bob Berg, who did the Go Giver, and Fearvana, a guy there, Nir Eyal, another great author and stuff that people might recognize. But that's all about how to get to the top and stay there. And it is a little bit of a performance optimization thing. So we do some time management and productivity hacks and things from time to time. But it's really about sales and leadership and how we can become our best selves through our work on that.
Nice. Very good. They both sound great. So I hope people check those out. And do you have a name for your book as you're working on it?
I think I'm going with Playful Humans is the name. So I would love your thoughts here. You can give me a quick one person survey feedback. I either want to tell stories of playful humans, and I might have to like get the rights to like 15 people, but kind of create an example, because like Steve Martin is one of my role models. Oh. I think he's intelligent and funny, and he has like incredibly intelligent, professional, but also unabashedly silly and not afraid to be goofy. So like if I could use him as an example, I could tell maybe 10, 15 stories of playful humans. Or number two is I'm thinking like it needs to be a game. Like I could create some sort of like puzzle game activity thing where I'm using 13 different games or things you could play to demonstrate the activities. What do you think? First impressions?
First impression was the first one for me, but I'm very much story driven. So that might be why I'm choosing that. Now, the other side of my brain is thinking people, what they experience, they remember, which would make the case for the game. But if you're just asking me, I love the stories.
Good. I like that. Now that I said that out loud, I'm thinking I can yes and that. Why can't I have a
story?
Why can't
you have both? Yeah. So exactly what I was thinking. There we go. There we go, Mike.
That's why you play with ideas.
That's right. Because you never know what's going to happen.
Oh, do we have 2 minutes?
Yeah.
We didn't play a game. So I got a game.
Oh, my God. Okay. All right, I'm nervous.
Survey says we surveyed 100 people. Bobby, the top 5 answers are on the card. Let's start with name a reason people give their bosses when they need a raise.
They're buying a new house.
Oh, new house is on there. Number two.
Woo.
Number two answer. Okay. And work hard, deserve it was number
one. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay. Let me get another one here for you. Name a good way to teach the children the value of money. Good way to teach children the value of money.
Give them an allowance. And
number one answer.
Oh, yes.
You got it. All right. Now, this is my favorite one. I ask everybody this one. During a power failure, name something you can still turn on.
Oh, wow. A flashlight.
Number one answer. Woo! You nailed it. I like radio, water faucet, and spouse on there. Great answers. Nicely done. Thanks for playing with me today, buddy.
Oh, my God. That was fun. Thank you, Mike, so much. I hope that you enjoyed Mike's energy and that you took away some good pieces of value from that conversation. Here are my three insights for thriving. Number one, there is no one right way. The truth is that there are usually a lot of ways that can work. One of the things that I've always thought for myself is that if I can only see one answer, then I'm really not looking hard enough. And if I can only see one answer, that could potentially lead me to make a poor choice. Number two, don't wait to enjoy your life. Be present in the moment, the small moments as well as the big moments, but engage fully in the moment in where you are now. Don't reserve it for someday or when you get to take vacation or when you retire. Enjoy it now. And number three, play has many benefits. It fosters creativity, connection, culture, and confidence. Some of my best memories from childhood revolve around making up games with my friends. We weren't worried about if we were doing it right. We were just having fun. And it makes me think, how can we reconnect to that spirit? So I'm curious, what is your favorite play activity? What helps you recharge? Because whatever that is for you, and it can be different for every single one of us, but whatever that is for you, how can you have more of that in your life? As always, thank you so much for tuning in. I truly hope that you're finding these stories and episodes both inspiring and valuable. If you have, then please share it with a friend or a colleague who could benefit from hearing it. I appreciate you helping us spread the message that we can all thrive no matter what.